Hi everyone, this is Sheila with Rowan Holistic Healing and Wellness. This is actually going to be a re-recording of episode 3, which was the episode on shadows, archetypes, and integration. Because I, as you know, being only the third episode, I'm still playing around and figuring out various stumbling blocks, and I listened to this podcast last night and it's driving me crazy because what I was trying to do was kind of record it in segments and also simultaneously winging it a little bit, like going with the flow. And so there were a lot of open-ended, if you will, open-ended comments that I never followed up on or circled back to, and starts and stops and repeats from when I had already said something and then repeated it in a later segment. So just totally scrapping that one, redoing it, going to do it in one take with notes. And the reason is I do have a little bit of a perfectionist tendency, although I'm a somewhat recovering perfectionist. But for this topic, it's really important, I think, to make it a very cohesive and coherent discussion so that it's just understandable. Because again, 2020, I mean, really, is there anything else to say? 2020, it's just, this is the time to heal and get this stuff done. And so to present an argument that is cohesive and coherent and understandable and in a format that's able to be utilized. So if you already listened to the other one, hopefully you will listen to this one and appreciate it in its new form. And if you didn't listen to the other one, I'm very happy for you. So again, if you're listening, you found the website. So my website is rowan-wellness.com. And that is where, if this kind of thing is of interest to you that I'm talking about, I do offer individual sessions that we can do by phone, by also by internet, Skype, Zoom, that sort of thing. And so online sessions are available there, and I do have a nudging suspicion that this is going to be turned into a class. So again, if this is interesting and you want to dive deeper, check back on the website. I don't have a class for this yet, but I will. And there will be other classes that are offered as well. So check out the website, social media, Instagram, Rowan Holistic Healing, or at Rowan Holistic Healing. Facebook is Rowan Holistic Healing and Wellness. Twitter at Sheila Rumble. And I'm also on Tumblr, but not often. So things get copied over there. So if you're on Tumblr, I think if you want to follow me on Tumblr, it's Rowan Holistic Healing. So all of my posts are automatically copied over to that site. And hopefully that's the right handle. If it's not, send me an email. By the way, if you ever have any questions or comments, my email is rowanwellness77@gmail.com. Okay, so today's episode, again, is on shadows, archetypes, and their integration. And the reason for this topic is that right now in 2020, we're in the midst of a transition. I talked about this all a little bit in episode 1 and 2. I just want to reiterate quickly because I want to illustrate why the shadows are so particularly relevant right now. We're in the midst of a transition, and with all transitions, that is a call to evolution. And evolution often accompanies or follows on the heels of healing. Not always. But often healing is a component of the evolution. And in this particular transition, it is definitely a component of the evolution. And the only things that can be healed are the things that we are conscious and aware of. So when transitions come about, when evolution is being brought to the surface, and a lot of times these things happen outside of our control. We don't necessarily initialize them. And the fact that this has been initialized on so many different levels, this is just the period that we have been called into by however you see the universe ordered, you know, whether you, you know, whatever, if you believe in a God or divinity or the source or whatever, but we really are collectively, we have been propelled into this transition on all layers. So this is a mega transition, a mega evolution that's being called for in our human consciousness, our awareness, how we perceive the world, and undertaking our healing. And so when these transitions initialize in this way, without any help or prompting from us, they will miraculously bring things to the surface that need to be addressed. Well, first of all, that need to be acknowledged and then addressed and healed. And so what has happened in 2020 is we see this magnification of the shadow aspects. So they have been here, just to be clear, the shadow aspects have always been here. They will always be a component of us even moving forward. But because we have lived collectively, not everyone, but collectively, we have lived in a very unconscious state, those shadows have really been allowed to run amok. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how that happens and why in just a few minutes. But I just wanted to say that the reason the shadows are, they're like exaggerated right now. They really are very magnified. And so these shadows tend to emerge in situations where we are acting very unconsciously, and we tend to act the most unconsciously when we're in a fight for survival or when we're afraid. So we can be afraid, but not necessarily fighting for survival. But when we're afraid, when we're destabilized. And so we're experiencing all of that right now. Some people feel like they're fighting for their survival, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's a fight for paying your rent and buying food. There have been other kind of hidden aspects to the mandates to lock down, including people that really need, that cannot be isolated right now, that need the support of family, friends, their community, whether we're talking about, you know, support for addictions through groups like AA, where, you know, they're around people that understand them and can offer specific support, people that go to worship. So we have all of these other components as well that are destabilizing people, making them afraid, perhaps putting them in not terribly safe situations. You know, you also have that inverse situation going on where people might be in homes where it's their home that's not inherently safe or stable. And so people right now, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's the lockdowns, whether it's unemployment and inability to pay bills, for some people, you know, it's just what does the future look like? You know, our whole world shifted like really almost with the blink of an eye, and people weren't prepared. And so, you know, now the question is, what happens next? What is this going to end up looking like? You know, nobody really foresaw what we have faced in 2020. Let's see. There was something else that I was going to say. I'm now forgetting. So much for doing this all in one coherent take, huh? Okay, so moving forward, though. What I was going to say basically is also the destabilization. And I touched on that before, but the collapse of structures and systems that we had always placed. Our perceptions told us that those things would serve a particular function or provide support for us, and that they would always be available. So we didn't really have alternate systems in place to bridge the gap. So when one system failed or one aspect that we use for support failed, there was nothing to come in behind it to take up the slack. And so that kind of destabilization also puts us in that kind of fight, flight, flee or freeze mode, which brings these shadows to the surface. So again, in 2020, you know, we're moving through this attempted evolution, this transition to, in my opinion, I mean, what we're really trying to do is to evolve not only us individually, in terms of, and when I say evolve, I mean really like becoming into a more conscious state, but also a more healed state. So not only are we doing that at an individual level, but there really is a call to heal a lot of our systems and our social structures, and to ultimately become, be able to come together as a global community, human community. And so the goal is to move through this transition in a way that actually moves us into a new level of evolution and doesn't simply circle us back around into an old pattern. So basically, when you're in a transition and you don't flow through it, you will circle at some point, you'll circle back around. And so you'll keep circling and attempting to get through this transition. And if you don't push through, then you circle around for another try. So we're really trying to break out of this pattern. And I think we've been circling for a while, to be honest. I think we have a lot of this that just kind of came to a head all at once. But I think individually, we've been circling a lot of these issues for a while, and we just kept circling. We just really weren't moving through this attempted transition, at this call to transition and evolve. We were kind of ignoring it. And so we want to really break these patterns. And the way to break the patterns is to see the patterns, to see the shadows, and then break them. And kind of, so we've seen through the illusion, we see them for what they are, and then we can break the pattern and heal them. Okay, so I've talked about, you know, these shadows that are coming up into awareness, into prominence, into this really heightened state. And again, they're heightened to the degree that they are because we're so destabilized individually, collectively. And, but what is the shadow? And so there's a lot of information out there on shadows and on shadow work. And my personal opinion is, and I'm sure some of it is really good, but a lot of it is, kind of based on misperception. And so I just wanted to do this. This is really just my perception on shadows and shadow work based on my own personal work and my work with others. And so I'm just putting this out there as another alternative perception, a viewpoint, and in an effort that, you know, I just like everybody else, I want to get through 2020 and I don't ever want to have to go through this again. So it really is kind of my way of contributing to this breaking of these patterns. And so, like I said, a lot of misconceptions about the shadow. So some of the, and as long as these misconceptions persist, we circle around. We really cannot heal the shadows because we haven't been looking at them in the right way. And so we tend to view shadows, at least in the work that I've seen, a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of what I've seen out there are people tend to view shadows as negative, dangerous, undesirable in terms of our worldview, in terms of how we see ourselves, in terms of how we wish to be seen by others. So we have given these things like this, we have almost deemed them, these shadow aspects, to be monsters, to be evil. So all of these horrible things that, you know, when you have a monster, what do we want to do? We want to get rid of it, right? And so we need to look at shadows not as a monster that we're trying to lock away. Okay, so shadows are merely one aspect of a multidimensional pattern. So that multidimensional pattern is called an archetype. So shadows are one aspect of this very multidimensional pattern that is an archetype. And archetypes are very powerful aspects of our personality that come in at a soul level. And so we know archetypes. And the reason, I mean, we know archetypes, this paradigm of thought and definition works. We have had writers and other various artists that have drawn off this idea of archetypes forever, and it works, and it's just a really, you know, it's a system of categorization. How do we understand the world? How do we bite it into chunks that we can understand and utilize? And so that really is what an archetype is. And so we have a lot of different archetypes. You can have archetypes that represent the self, but you can have archetypes that represent a lot of different concepts as well. Places, tools, initiations, so all kinds of ideas. That's what these are. And so again, to repeat, a shadow is merely one aspect of a very complex archetype. And that archetype, when we will look at it in a greater, expanded way, has many strengths. It has pitfalls. Those are the things that we typically assign to the shadow. But when we are able to utilize these archetypes in their integrated form, which means we're looking at them as strengths and weaknesses, we are able to dissolve illusion. We're able to spot those patterns. So it gives us a framework for spotting patterns of behavior. And so we are able to spot that those patterns in not only ourselves, but also in others. So that can be that can manifest as we are able to see other people more clearly and perhaps avoid situations where we might be compromised in some way. But the flip side of that is that, especially if you're someone in healing work, by the way, we're all healers in some way, whether or not, you know, you call yourself a healer or we all have the capacity to be healers in some fashion. And so as a healer, when you're able to utilize archetypes, a lot of times it allows you to have access to tools, not only the viewpoint of spotting a pattern, but it will often give you tools to help. Whether those tools are your ability to offer compassion and hold space for someone who's struggling with one of these shadow aspects, or offering shared experience. So a lot of tools can actually come about through this integration of the shadow into its multidimensional archetypal pattern. So let's talk about some of the specific archetypes that are really showing up right now. And again, we're seeing the shadow aspects of these emerge. But remember that they exist as a complete archetype. And so these particular archetypes, because of the nature of 2020 and, you know, this call to evolve, and really it's an evolution out of this survival subconscious type living that we do largely into a more conscious mode of existence, conscious and harmonious. And so what we're seeing right now are the survival archetypes, and I'm calling them the survival archetypes. I'm actually basing this part on the work by Carolyn Mace. I'm a huge fan of hers. I have a lot of respect for her work, and I think she has really put out some incredible, amazing stuff. And so one of her biggest contributions, in my opinion, has been her work on archetypes. And she, in her classification and viewpoint, we have certain survival archetypes that we all share. And those archetypes come out, as their name implies, in an effort to help us survive. And just if you're curious, by the way, the book that she goes most into, she has a lot of, I believe, online classes where she talks about archetypes. But the book that relates to them the most, there may be more than one, but the one that I'm aware of is Sacred Contracts. So if you're interested in diving into her work in more detail, that is the book that I would recommend. So Sacred Contracts by Carolyn Mace. And her last name, if you're not familiar with her, is actually spelled M-Y-S-S. So M-Y-S-S. Okay, so when we have, so again, we all have, according to her classification, now I've heard some other people talk They also classify four basic survival archetypes. They've just given them slightly different names. I happen to think that Carolyn Mace's system, out of all of the ones that I've looked at, makes the most sense and feels the most correct and complete to me. So that's the one I'm going to work with today. But basically, we all have these four survival archetypes. And then in her classification, you have 12 main archetypes. So four of these survival archetypes plus eight others. And those eight others can vary person to person. So when I'm in this context talking about archetypes pertaining to the self, and so those archetypes can be a variety of things like king, queen, mother, father, healer, there's an exorcist. there's a networker, there's the truth teller. So you have all of these different archetypes that can make up the bulk or the remainder of a person's personality. So these archetypes, I don't think I already said this. Remember that archetypes, or don't remember if I didn't already say it, but these archetypes comprise the personality that a soul brings into their incarnate life. And so that's what we're looking at. So what comprises the personality? It's these archetypal patterns. And so she believes you have 12 total main ones. She acknowledges there can be more, but 12 main ones. She bases that kind of on the astrological system in terms of looking at houses, if anybody is interested in that. So you have 12 main ones in her system, with four of those comprised of these survival archetypes. Now the other archetypes, and again, there's eight other main ones plus an sundry of minor ones, they all interact and come into play at different points. They can also have relationships with one another, where if you have one, you can have a tendency to have another, so they kind of play well together or go hand in hand, but not always. And so, but what I want to look at here are the four survival, because those are the ones that when we are in this mode that we're in right now, they really do come to the forefront, and they really are the ones that are in charge. They're the ones that's setting the direction and determining the actions and responses. So they're the ones that we really want to focus on at this level. So again, these archetypes, these survival archetypes, come to the forefront when we're forced to enact desperate measures, and when they are not completed, integrated, activated archetypes, when they're existing in the shadow, they really do bring about less desirable behaviors, because it really is that time of desperation. Like it's the pulling out all the stops, like what's really going to get your attention here. And so if you want to think about, I just think we're going to talk about the child in a minute, but I just want to illustrate here quickly so you kind of understand. It's like a child who is really past the point of being hungry and past the point of being tired or whatever it is, and they just have that complete and total meltdown until you're like, wow, okay, now you have my attention. I see something's going on. So in that same fashion, these survival archetypes operate in that same way. So we see them as shadow slash very negative and undesirable, but really the intention, their goal is to get your attention so that you take care of things. So again, it's not this like attempt to be difficult or undesirable. It really is an attempt to get your attention so that things can be addressed so that you can survive. And so as we go through these survival archetypes, I'm going to be talking about archetypes, the shadow aspect. So again, that's just one aspect of a multidimensional archetype. There will also be a light aspect. And so I just, before we start going into it, I want to make the point that, you know, the question comes up, can an archetype exist in its light form only? And the answer to that is no. It can only exist, it always exists in its whole form, But we have, when we're, again, it's like when we're really in that mode, that fight for survival, we're at our base, right? And so these survival archetypes, we've really stripped them down to the base. Like, they have nothing left, no reserves, and that's why we're getting the desperate measures. So the potential for the whole form is always there, but what is often manifested is just that very base aspect, which we term the shadow. Once we integrate and heal it, you never will get to just the light form, though. It really will exist in its entire form, meaning that the potential for that shadow aspect to reemerge exists, and it exists in moments of fear, illness, distraction, disorientation, any of those where we're destabilized, that shadow aspect can kind of creep back in. So if that's the case, you might be wondering, why do we even bother to integrate? And the reason is that once we integrate, once we accept that archetype in its entirety, even though we have we still have the potential to express the shadow aspect, what will often happen is when it's in its more healed, integrated form, we become aware of that shadow aspect, its presence, much, much more quickly. And we also have more tools to deal with it. So really, when we find ourselves in that mode, it's like the three A's. We have awareness, so we see it for what it is. And then we have, I kind of group these together, we have acknowledgement and acceptance. So that's really the bulk of the work that we need to do. It's the honest evaluation of all aspects of an archetype, not just the shadow aspect, but also the incredible potential that exists in that archetype for light and for good. And when we can do that evaluation honestly, without a lot of judgment and a lot of designation of good or bad, that is when we integrate it in its whole form. And so we really, and then we take action. You know, we take an action to change our behavior or whatever's happening in the situation. And so how do we see it? How do we become aware of it? That's the first step. That comes back to, in episode one, I said, you know, the thing that people can do, the best thing people can do right now is to really take a moment to pause and to question. And so it's not only questioning the information that is coming in, but it's also pausing to question how we're responding. So not only information coming in, but our response to it. Particularly when, in my experience, it is a huge red flag that a shadow is operating when there is an extreme reflexive response to whatever, to some kind of information or stimulus coming in. Perception is activated. And if there's an extreme reflective response, which is also called triggered, when that happens, it's often a red flag that one of these shadows has been triggered. So as you're kind of working through this healing process, the awareness comes through your response and how you're responding to information and stimulus. And then again, really coming to a place of neutrality and acceptance. And from that place, you will be able to integrate and heal. And that happens just through changed behavior, even if the changed behavior is changed perception. Okay. So, as I mentioned, Carolyn Mace has four survival archetypes. And the first time, if you listen to the first recording, I had really no intention of going through all of these. I had actually just picked one to work through as an example. And then as I was talking, realized really how relevant and prevalent these four survival archetypes all are right now. And decided to kind of just change the whole direction and really focus on these. So, not to recreate her work, but it is very very pertinent and very relevant. And then from here, I'll move into a couple of other ones just because, like I said, these are the four main ones that are really, really active right now. And they really, because they're the fundamental archetypes, being the survival archetypes, they dictate a lot of the behaviors and actions that we're seeing right now and responses. So they're comprising the bulk. And then you'll have other archetypes that are playing roles. But right now, because we're collectively triggered, it's really these four archetypes that are really in prominence. It's important to note that when we're talking about any archetype, predominantly the four survival archetypes in this case, because they are the foundational archetypes, but any archetype really is concerned with issues around power and sovereignty. So when we're looking at any archetype, we're really looking at issues of giving away power, reclaiming power, sustenance and nurturance of power, growing power, etc., but issues around power and personal sovereignty. And so the archetypes, the survival archetypes, most strongly, because they are the foundational archetypes, have to do with really how do you claim your personal power. So it's really that foundation of how are we deriving our inner power and defining our sovereignty. So these archetypes, these foundational archetypes in particular, but really all archetypes to an extent, these archetypes, these four survival archetypes need a certain amount of fulfillment in the early part of life. So through childhood and adolescence and even really into young adulthood, you have to kind of get to a point where someone is allowed to make decisions and really honor their own internal compasses and derivations of power. And so these archetypes really kind of need to have this development process where they're fleshed out, so to speak. And when that isn't allowed to happen, what will happen is it can never really become activated or come into its evolved form. And so what will happen is that these archetypes are still largely only half formed or partially formed will end up carrying over into adulthood, which means they carry over these manifestations of being unevolved or unhealed. So, and that would include patterns of behavior, emotions, thought forms, etc. And so in Carolyn Mace's system, as I said, there's four: child, victim, saboteur, and prostitute. I'm going to start with the child because one of the things we're going to talk about later is really how these archetypes are perceived and how that can impact the integration of them, the identification and the integration of them. And so I'm going to start with the child because when we look at a child, we really are able to see a child in a more honest / neutral / non-judgmental space. So even though we might see some negative aspects or things that we perceive to be negative aspects or behaviors, we're really kind of, for the most part, able to incorporate that into this whole wider, broader sense of what a child is and see it that it's, despite maybe having some moments of difficulty, is really a quite beautiful being. And so I want to bring the child in first so that we can really see that there, it really is a multidimensional pattern that when we can see it in that way, we are better able to harness it. And so when we look at the child archetype, and again, it's kind of premised on children. And so the idea really is that as a child, as an actual child, you exhibit this pattern in its natural form. And so Carolyn calls the child archetype, and I'm going to be very informal with her name. I think she's actually Dr. Mace. But the child is actually, she calls the child the guardian of innocence, the guardian of innocence. So I really like that term. But we know when we, if you have children or you've been around children or whatever, if you remember your own childhood, children tend to be these things. They tend to be curious and questioning. They are natural investigators. They really are inquisitive. And they just ask question after question after question. They're honest. They will really tell you what they think, regardless of if it is potentially hurtful, because they don't really understand that yet. They're not necessarily defensive in that way, potentially in later years, but as young children, they haven't really developed that sense of self yet that lets their feelings get hurt very easily. So conversely, they're also very honest when they talk to you. They're playful, sometimes needy, but while we may have a negative connotation of that word needy, they're needy for the simple fact that children are not able to provide for themselves yet on their own. And so they do need things. I mean, and frankly, we all need things and have moments of being needy. They're imaginative, emotional, intuitive, naturally intuitive. We're all, I made that point in the first one or the second one, I can't remember, episode one or episode two, we're all intuitive. We all have that ability. What has happened is that if that particular aspect isn't nurtured or at least not suppressed. So what will happen a lot of times, if somebody can at least maintain neutrality with intuition, it can still tend to continue and develop. But as soon as a child is told, like, their gut instincts don't matter, they really start that process of being shut down. But children are very in touch with their intuition, and they're also able really to see beyond the veil very pretty clearly. Innocent. I know, you know, we can, we can debate, you know, because children, you know, I had one child who was just like such a hider. If he found something he liked, he would hide it somewhere, you know? And so, but they really are innocent in the way that they relate to the world. And so they try out these other things that they see around them in the adult world, but really are largely innocent in terms of, just how they see people and how they see situations. And another important aspect of a child is that they are hopeful. So a child, as we know, needs adequate nurturing from parental or other supportive figures to completely evolve. So, and when I say that, it's really not, you know, adequate nurturing isn't just physical security and safety, like food, water, shelter, and clothing. But that also incorporates this idea of unconditional love and support. And when we talk about unconditional love and support, what we also mean, I mean, a lot of parents say, well, of course I love my children. But how many expectations are getting tied to that? How much latitude are children do they have to kind of explore and make their own choices? Within reason. I mean, that's why we're here as parents. You know, we kind of, you know, try to hem in the sides so it doesn't get super crazy, but there has to be a balance there. And so, when I say unconditional love, to really, really grow all four of these survival archetypes and allow them to grow into their mature state, there has to be ample latitude to develop emotional depth, autonomy. They need to have adequate mental stimulation and room to develop and maintain their own spiritual viewpoint. So kind of what I was saying earlier about, you know, allowing to maintain their sense of intuition and things like that. So when they say they see fairies, believe that they see fairies. You know, those types of things really do help these four survival archetypes evolve and mature. Not just the child, but the other ones as well. And, okay, so those are aspects of children And if we really want to grow and mature this archetype into its evolved form, it really does need these other aspects of physical security, not only, but also love and support. By the way, love and unconditional love and support doesn't mean always saying yes either. I mean, there are times to say no, and like I said, put in those boundaries. So I just want to be clear that there really is a balance there between love, support, and boundaries. And that is probably the hardest part of parenthood. At least it has been for me. So, okay. What happens when the child isn't allowed to mature into a complete evolved archetype, it will carry over into adulthood. So it never stops the attempt to grow and mature. So it will persist into adulthood. And of course, by the time we get into adulthood, though, the dynamics have changed. And so this is where I want to talk about relational patterns that can form between archetypes. So a child archetype will have a relational pattern in its unhealed, unevolved, immature state with father and mother archetypes of various sorts. So an actual child has a relationship with father figures and mother figures. But as the child grows, so let's say we're now into adulthood and you still have an immature child archetype, the adult will seek out, substitutes, surrogates. So we'll search out, father and mother archetypes through surrogate form. And so whether that is an actual person or a system or the government, so it can come in a variety of different ways, but basically there will still be seeking out that father and mother because those are the archetypes that provide the nurturance and the basis for the maturation. So they're really looking, like I said, the archetype always continues trying to mature, trying to evolve, and it will seek whatever means necessary to do that. Okay, so a child, again, so these things in an actual child, you know, 3 or 4 years old or whatever, I mean, whatever, the age doesn't matter, but an actual child, these things are normal. So what I'm talking about now, when I talk about the child in shadow, I just want to be very clear. In an actual child, these things aren't a problem. Now, these are things you can kind of look at if you're looking to see if the child is maturing through, but they're normal. It's only when we have an immature child archetype manifesting in an adult. And so what I mean by that is if we have a 44-year-old man or woman who's exhibiting these, it can be a clue that their child archetype is operating in shadow. So again, shadow is that survivalist mode, and it's that indication that it needs nurturing in order to evolve and mature. So in shadow, a child archetype really can become manipulative in an effort to get needs met. So that's probably the biggest one. But there are a lot of other signs of the child in shadow. And I'm going through the child in detail because it really is just such, it's a huge one. And it's honestly the one that I see manifested the most. Even though all four of these are present, this is the one that really, really tends, in my opinion, to be the one dominant of the four survival archetypes. And it is the foundational one, by the way. It's kind of like the initial one to get the ball rolling, to get the other ones to mature. So if you are stuck in some patterns and you think your survival archetypes are operating in shadow, the very first one I would tell you to take a look at would be the child and get the child squared away and in a good place. And then the other ones tend to happen, more easily. That's probably not quite the right word that I want to use there, but they will tend to follow along that trajectory more easily. Okay, so in shadow, the child archetype can become manipulative in an effort to get needs met. But the other characteristics of a child in shadow, and again, this is like we're talking about an adult. So if you see a 44-year-old acting these ways, that's a pretty good sign that their child has come out. An inability to defend oneself or keep oneself safe, so not making safe choices. And that can be a lot of things. That can also be pertaining to health, by the way. So when we're talking about, you know, not, I'm not just talking about physical safety, but like physical out in public safety. I'm also talking about physical health and wellness as well. Doing things that are extremely dangerous, that sort of thing. An inability or unwillingness to provide for oneself in whatever form that is, whether it's, you know, food, financial, whatever. Inability or unwillingness to grow up and accept responsibility. Inability or unwillingness to seek the truth or to seek truth or learning. Actually, I had that worded a little differently. Inability and unwillingness to see or seek truth or learning. And it's really kind of that desire to stay in fantasy worlds of illusion that provide comfort. That can also manifest as closed-mindedness or rigidness, but kind of just really like not wanting to dive into difficult topics, like just leave that to someone else, can be the child in shadow. Inability or unwillingness to forgive or heal. Lack of gratitude or acknowledgement of progress. And so what that means is like, you know, when you get into an argument with someone who's got their child, who's brought their child archetype to the fight, which will, by the way, often happen. So if you get into a situation with someone, a lot of times it is the child that just comes forward. And that those arguments, you might as well just walk away from those because there's no winning them, not at that time. And so basically what that means is you'll have people who default to claiming always, never kind of thing. And I said all or nothing viewpoints as well. Inability or unwillingness to allow for loving yet realistic relationships. So this is allowing autonomy of a partner or a child or whatever. So it's really, you know, I love you, but, and then you have this flood of expectations. Okay. Let's see. Inability and unwillingness to take the long view. So they tend to be very impulsive. And their actions are immediate, you know, without really, without a lot of thought, a lot of foresight, a lot of long range plans. Let's see, the next one is persistence in tribal thought. So what that means is really a strong need to belong. And that also kind of goes along with overarching views of negativity. So extreme pessimism. So I know that I said that children are hopeful and innocent, but when in shadow, because especially the shadow manifested in an adult, you have to remember that that hopefulness has probably dried up. So when we're talking about hopefulness and innocence, those aspects are of a child that is well in integrated form. In shadow form, where it's been depleted, the energy has been depleted, they do tend to be very, very negative. And the idea of the tribal thought and needing to belong is an attempt to derive energy. So they're deriving energy through approval from the tribe. And then remember, the purpose of the tribe is also to provide safety and security. So people who are in their shadow child archetype tend to be very tribal in nature in terms of really believing in sides, like taking sides or having a favorite team, like to extreme, I mean extreme, like really like, and having a team they hate to the point that they might be, and I don't mean like playful banter, like this is my favorite team and I don't like your team sucks. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about really, it just gets, you know, how people can get with some of that stuff. So kind of that idea, and not just sports teams, but political, you know, like my side is right, your side is wrong kind of thing. My religion is right, your religion is wrong. We see that kind of tribal allegiance really come out in children archetypes that are in shadow. So again, archetypes, this unhealed, immature child archetype that's operating in like an adult. Okay. Whew. So that was the child. So in its overall form, you know, again, the children, these children have these really amazing set of innate qualities that can get lost into the shadow if the shadow isn't matured appropriately as the child ages. And then that will carry over into adulthood in an attempt to continue that process of growing and evolving. All right, the next one that I want to go through is victim. And so Carolyn terms this one the guardian of self-esteem. But I think, in my opinion, the victim has more to do with sovereignty and self-sufficiency. And so a victim, of course, is someone that needs a temporary, and temporary being the operative word, someone that needs a temporary infusion of energy or some other form of aid and support, including protection, after their own security or stability has been threatened in some way. So that is a victim, someone that needs temporary support. What happens when the victim goes into shadow, however, and why does it go into shadow? I mean, it can go into shadow because of repeated events. But really, when we're looking at the shadow here, I just really see the child of the four foundational archetypes. It really all comes back to the child. So if you have a child who is still very unwell and immature, the victim can come into play in shadow form, because what the victim is able to do is to provide support and energy through the victim archetype. So what happens with the victim is that we come and we offer aid and support, right? These are things that a child needs. And so sometimes we'll get the victim in shadow rising up, because through the victim, they can derive support, sympathy, things that feel nurturing and needed, and that they may have not gotten as children. And so also in an effort to mature the child and, you know, meet the needs that the child had. These feelings of support and sympathy, so it sounds manipulative and it sounds needy, but it's really coming up because it's those things, support, sympathy, security, feel nurturing in people that have not felt nurtured or safe or supported in the past. So they're really trying to backfill needs that were not met earlier. The shadow can also come out in victims in terms of victimizing others for personal gain. All right. When we can bring the victim into light, though, so again, when I talk about bringing an archetype into the light, I'm really talking about accepting it in its integrated form, acknowledging that the shadow is still there and can still pop up in certain situations. But when we have an integrated victim, the light aspect that is now available to us to utilize is that once you have integrated this victim form, again, you're better able to see this pattern in yourself and in others. So you're able to identify the pattern often way, way more quickly, and you're able to break the pattern or at least get the pattern neutralized so that you can get back, you know, back into a more light aspect. The other part, and again, remember I said, so really the two parts of these archetypes, when you bring them out of shadow, the two biggest benefits that become available are, one, the ability to recognize the patterns more quickly and to break them or neutralize them. The second thing is really the tools of offering support to others, right? Because if you have been through something and healed it, you have a whole different perception and viewpoint than someone that hasn't. That's why we have groups like AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, because only really someone that has been down that road fully understands what someone is going through who is traversing that path. And same thing happens with these archetypes. So someone who has been the victim but has integrated that archetype is better able to support other people who are currently victims, whether or not, and I don't mean in this sense, you know, whether it's a victim who has actually been victimized and does legitimately need support, or a victim who is operating in the shadow aspect. But someone who has integrated this form is really better able to offer support to another victim, in terms of really understanding that we're not really talking now. There's a saying, it's like better to teach a man to farm. I don't know. But anyway, it's that idea of teaching someone skills versus just handing them something and keeping them dependent. That idea is going to come into play in just a minute, but they really are better able to offer and to know to offer things that are empowering versus things that are a crutch, because they know that they need to get that person out of that cycle before it does evolve into the shadow. The thing I want to talk about later, that kind of offering a crutch versus empowerment, that actually is part of a relational pattern with the savior or the rescue archetype. And I want to come back to that towards the end. So the third of the four survival archetypes is the saboteur. And Carolyn terms this one guardian of choice. I think this one has a lot more to do with self-esteem. Again, that's just my perception of it and how I understand it and relate to it. So the saboteur is pretty self-explanatory. It's in its shadow form. It can be very self-destructive because of it's reacting to fears and a lack of self-esteem. And so in that lack of self-esteem, in the fear state, often an irrational fear state, it will become self-destructive. So it's kind of that idea of like having a hope and a dream to do, you know, whatever, paint a masterpiece. And then the saboteur in shadow will come in and say, but you really don't have the skill to paint a masterpiece. And if you try to do that, then this is what's going to happen. You know, somebody's going to say your painting is awful, and then someone is not, you know, they're going to repeat that as a rumor. And then a lot of people aren't going to like you because you've painted this horrible painting. And then, you know, and then you're going to be destitute and you're going to be living in the street. Like the saboteur can take you so far down this, really dark rabbit hole of failure, the perception of failure, that it's really difficult to get motivated back up and to kind of, so it's really like the killer of hope and dreams when it's in its shadow self. And again, it's largely due to irrational fear and a lack of self-esteem. So the saboteur in shadow is also, will also tend to undermine others, because why should somebody else have what you don't have? What you personally don't have. So the attempt to sabotage someone else to keep the playing field level is how the saboteur will operate in shadow. Again, in light, those tools to offer compassion and empathy to others that are exhibiting self-destructive patterns, and more importantly, the ability to see that very clearly and quickly. So to be able to see the self-destruction, the pattern, to see the illusion of the irrational fears, and to be able to break that. Okay, the fourth of the four survival archetypes is the prostitute. And Carolyn terms this one the guardian of faith. And again, I'm getting these from the book Sacred Contracts. If you're interested, please check that out.